Welcome to Out of Bounds. I'm Tish Perlman. My guest is Jeff Cohen. Cohen is a journalist, media critic, columnist, lecturer, and educator. He is the founding director of the Park Center for Independent Media and an associate professor of journalism, both at Ithaca College. Cohen was also a political commentator on all three cable news channels, CNN, MSNBC, and Fox News. He is the author of five books, including Cable News Confidential and My Misadventures in Corporate Media. In 1986, he founded the media watchdog group, Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting. And welcome to the show.
Great to be with you.
Now, I want to talk about the fact that you started out in the world of law. You passed the bar in 1981 in California. Was that going to be your career?
And no.
What happened?
No. When I went to law school, I always assumed I would stay a journalist and an advocate. Because I was a college dropout, very radical in the 1960s, I was so into political activity that it just didn't seem right to me at the time to be at an elite college with the upper middle class students. I wanted to organize. And so I never had a bachelor's degree. I went to a law school in California that didn't require it. But when I did go to law school, I already was a journalist. I already was an advocate. I soon got a job at the ACLU of Southern California before I was finished with law school as an advocate around police brutality issues and police spying on nonviolent activists.
Yeah.
So I always assumed when I went to law school, I would be a journalist. I did one big case. I was a junior lawyer on the biggest case in Los Angeles. It was the ACLU case against the LA police for spying on nonviolent activists. We won close to $2 million settlement. I retired. How many lawyers can say they never lost a case?
That's great. Yeah. I love it.
So I retired 1-0. When people ask me, are you a lawyer? I say I'm a recovering attorney.
So what were some of your first gigs in journalism? Were you writing for the Free Press that were out in those days?
Sure. I wrote for the L.A. Free Press. I grew up in Michigan, where I wrote for the Fifth Estate.
Oh.
I wrote for the Michigan Sun. These were some of the original alternative weeklies. I covered very early in my career. I became an expert on the FBI's COINTELPRO program. That was the harassment of African-American leadership and New Left newspapers and New Left activists. I became an expert on the Martin Luther King assassination. So some of my first articles were in the African-American-oriented press. I was always writing in the independent media. It wasn't until the 80s, so I started writing in the early 70s. It wasn't until the 80s that I started getting columns published in the Los Angeles Times and mainstream dailies. But for the first 10, 12 years, the biggest publications I'd be in were publications like New Times Magazine or Mother Jones was then big. My early career was completely in independent media, and then I segued into the mainstream.
Well, I want to talk to you about how did you segue into this broadcast journalism realm?
Right. Well, it was a strange series of flukes. I'd been mostly an independent journalist for independent publications. And then sort of fed up with the mainstream media, I started FAIR in 1986, and our goal was to sort of take progressive, well-documented media criticism out of under-circulated books and magazines. I mean, Chomsky and Herman had written so many books, and The Nation magazine would have great media criticism. Most people didn't see it.
Yeah.
So we set up FAIR to try to popularize the well-documented progressive critique of what was wrong with our corporate media. And we did serious studies of who appears on TV and who doesn't, what think tanks get asked to be on National Public Radio and which don't. We did studies of Nightline. We did studies of the Public TV NewsHour. We did studies of NPR's Morning Edition and All Things Considered. And whatever study we did, these were serious academic studies, rigorous, non-exaggerated studies, we found an overwhelming bias at all of those news outlets, including public TV and radio, toward the corporate point of view, labor, environmental, or consumer rights points of view. We found Republicans study after study appeared on the air more than Democrats. It's usually close to 50%, but always favored Republicans. That's the phenomenon where the right wing is always yelling liberal media bias,
exactly,
and the middle of the road journalists trying to prove they're not overboard and making their coverage more conservative than it should be. So we did serious studies of the mainstream media. We were especially critical of television news. And as we got bigger and bigger, a lot of these TV news, and it was the advent of cable news. CNN started in the 80s, mm-hmm, and two other channels started in the 90s. When there'd be media controversies, they would often ask me to speak as a representative of this nonprofit group called FAIR. And over time, I was pretty good at it as a debater. And I was a little handsomer then when I was young. Of course, that's the most important thing in mainstream television. So,
you started working for them.
Yes,
right?
After a while, they started paying me. They started saying, look, would you be a regular and we'll give you money. And so I started at CNN, where they would sometimes pay me. For a while, I was a regular on Crossfire as a guest, and I even co-hosted the show.
A big question that I get from a lot of people, because I'm in the media too, and I have no idea what the answer is. Do they twist your arm and have you have takes on things based on liberalism or conservatism? Do they make you talk that way?
If you're the voice of the left, they want you to defend the Democratic Party 100%, even when the Democratic Party is taking positions to the right of center.
I've seen that happen over and over.
So that's a definite. The reason I was actually tried out to be the permanent co-host of Crossfire, which was their left-right debate show when it was the biggest show on CNN.
I remember.
They've brought it back on the air and few people watch it. But when in the 80s, it would alternate with Larry King on what got the best ratings that night. So I was tested to be the permanent co-host from the left. And as people said to me, you're never going to get hired because to be the voice of the left on American TV, you can't legitimately be on the left. You have to be sort of a baby step left of center. You can't really be an advocate that's critical of corporate America.
Yeah.
And when I was at CNN, the top executive there made it clear to me that their main fear about hiring me was that I'd be critical of the main sponsors. And the main sponsor when I was there was General Electric. And I was known to be a critic of, I'd written articles about General Electric.
Yeah.
I'd written articles about how GE has too much power over the media. And so I never got the job. I would argue that the main thing that you're cautioned by the executives in television news, from my experience, I wrote a whole book about it called Cable News Confidential, is they're fearful that you're going to antagonize economic or political power groups.
Exactly.
You know, if all you do is talk about feminists and environmentalists in a negative way, you're great. But what they worry about is you're especially going to talk about big business in a way that might drive away those corporate sponsors, or you're going to talk about management. When you work in television news, you're working for super powerful corporations that are all lobbying on many issues in Washington. So when I worked at NBC and I was a critic of the upcoming invasion of Iraq, I'm talking about 2002, mm-hmm, I was at MSNBC, which was part of NBC and owned by General Electric, you know you're interfering with the profit margins of your corporate parent, General Electric, which makes a lot of money from foreign intervention, foreign war, and then rebuilding a country after it's destroyed. If you work at MSNBC now, you're working for Comcast and General Electric. They're the main company lobbying to try to end, one of the main companies lobbying to try to end net neutrality, which is what's given us the free and open internet.
Yeah.
If you work at ABC News, your boss is Disney, and they have very strong interests in sweatshops. They have very strong interest in overseas manufacturing of their T-shirts and toys and what have you.
So do you think this corporate takeover is the reason why there has been a decline in journalism? Everybody has complained about it. During the presidential election, I used to scream at the TV, why aren't you following up, asking them to support these ridiculous claims?
There's no doubt as the media have concentrated in the hands of fewer and fewer large corporations, journalism has withered. There's just no doubt about it. Beginning in the 80s, the TV networks were taken over by bigger companies and then even bigger ones.
Some of that has to do with the FCC letting that happen, correct?
It's a circle. The big media and telecommunications corporations control the FCC and Congress. As a result of that, the FCC and Congress constantly loosens the rules that allow fewer and fewer giant companies to gain more and more power.
Yeah.
If the public were ever asked, and all this is done behind closed doors. So all these secret deals. The worst thing in the media area for decades was signed by Bill Clinton. It was the Telecommunications Reform Act of 1996, and the Democratic Party, represented by Clinton, was getting huge money, soft money donations from telecommunications and media companies.
Isn't that amazing?
The Republican Speaker of the House, his party was getting huge money from the same telecommunications and media corporations, and behind closed doors, they passed the Telecommunications Act, which was the biggest act that changed the rules on media, the biggest thing in about 60 years. But we couldn't get the mainstream media to write about this very huge change. And there was even a group called the Consumer Federation of America that saw that the media wasn't covering, mainstream media was not covering this biggest shakeup of the media that was going to benefit these few media corporations. And so the Consumer Federation of America raised money, went to CNN and said, we want to buy 30 seconds of time to criticize this bill, and CNN wouldn't take their money.
So how do you find out about these things? I mean, how does this stuff finally surface?
Yeah, the public doesn't find out unless they read FAIR. I mean, at the time, FAIR was a small nonprofit group that I had founded a few years earlier, and we were yelling and screaming about this thing. I was writing op-ed columns in some major dailies, but for the most part, the mainstream media missed the story. Look, the mainstream media later missed the whole Wall Street meltdown that tanked the global economy.
Right. So do you think it feels like there's been a big PR machine that's become the gatekeeper so that reporters can't even have access to...
Well, as you said in your previous question, this question, two great questions. Yes, journalism has shrunk as a result of corporate greed. There's fewer journalists out there. And these same corporations that have... help to wither away journalism, hire a lot of public relations people to do their spinning.
Absolutely.
It used to be sort of a one-to-one relationship, that for every journalist, there was one PR professional trying to spin for big corporations or big politicians. And now I've heard that the figure is more like for every one journalist, there's four or five PR professionals giving you the corporate spin.
It's so obvious that people are just, you know, reproducing press releases in many ways.
And they do it more and more. And the people that have remained, as these media corporations have gotten bigger, the people that have stayed, the journalists, quote unquote, who have the most power, are usually the most suck-ups to political and economic power. I'm talking about people like David Gregory at Meet the Press.
Agree with you on that
Chuck
one.
Chuck Todd, you know, these people, Bob Schieffer, he's virtually a shill for corporate and political elites. So these TV news stars, and even some of the New York Times stars, they become so cozy with the political elite they're supposed to report on critically, that critical reporting becomes impossible. And the young, aggressive journalists who, you know what journalistic ethics are, well, they often get spat out of the system. I could tell you about the horror stories that happened to me during the run-up to Iraq, and I think it was a lesson for all young journalists.
Oh, this was when you were the producer of the Phil Donahue show, right?
Yes, yeah. I was a senior producer for Phil Donahue's primetime show on MSNBC, which started in the summer of 2002. And as we got closer and closer to the invasion, management basically took over our show. They didn't want Phil Donahue to be Phil Donahue. They gave us orders as the Iraq invasion got closer and closer, and we were one of the few shows that had people that were saying, you know, may not be a good idea to invade Iraq. It may not be over and done with in 3 weeks or 3 months, which is what most of the experts, quote-unquote, were saying.
I remember.
So we were a place that had dissenting voices. Management wouldn't tolerate it. They ordered us that every time we put on a guest on the Phil Donahue primetime show on MSNBC who is anti-war, against the invasion of Iraq, we had to put two that were pro-war. If we had two guests on the left, we had to have three on the right. At one meeting, a producer said she thought she could book the documentary filmmaker Michael Moore who was a major critic of the idea of invading Iraq, and she was told she'd have to have three right-wingers for balance. So, you know, I privately thought about having Noam Chomsky as a guest, but our stage couldn't accommodate the 38 right-wingers we would have needed for balance.
We'll continue talking about this. If you're just joining us, my guest is Jeff Cohen. He's the founding director of the Park Center for Independent Media and an associate professor of journalism at Ithaca College. Tell us more about this, Phil Dunn, because it's very telling.
Right. So they order us to bias the show, the one show that was having real dissenting views, in favor of the pro-invasion side. And then 3 weeks before the invasion, they took us off the air. And we were the most watched program on that channel.
I remember when that happened. Right, I was shocked.
We would have been more watched if they hadn't screwed with our show for months. But even in spite of their meddling, we were the most watched program. Now, how many TV channels will cancel their most watched program? It was pure politics. We learned the next day through an internal memo that leaked out from NBC News that said, Donahue represents a difficult public face for NBC. He seems to delight in presenting guests who are anti-war, anti-Bush, and skeptical of the administration's motives, unquote. That's the NBC motive.
So they let him speak for himself in some ways.
Well, the interesting thing is, when I first got interested in journalism, I thought, well, in a free society, in a democratic society, the role of journalists is to be skeptical of the administration.
Exactly.
But that was not acceptable at NBC or, I would argue, any news channel during that period.
So tell me, Jeff, what do you think this is doing for our democracy? I mean, it's doing bad things to democracy.
Yeah, there's no doubt that as the journalism shrinks and withers, because of corporate greed, even city dailies are shrinking. The Ithaca Journal and Ithaca New York is shrinking. Mm. There's less reporters covering City Hall. There's less reporters covering the state houses. There's less reporters on Capitol Hill.
Not to mention school boards.
Small towns.
Yeah,
it's basically a corruption-free zone. I mean, it's a corruption-granted zone because there's no reporters on the beat anymore because of corporate greed and the wiping out of journalism. And then with the power that corporations have over both political parties through their donations, we get laws that really need the scrutiny of a free, aggressive, independent press, but we don't have that anymore.
Exactly, and it's getting worse since Citizens United. Obviously,
no doubt.
It's gotten worse.
Right. So I mean, there's a great new book about all of this called Dollarocracy, written by John Nichols of The Nation and Professor Bob McChesney, that talks all about the shrinking of journalism and the growth of corporate PR and the growth of corporate power over the two parties. But I want to give you the good news. The good news is that independent media are growing.
I was going to ask you about that. Yeah.
That's why they brought me to Ithaca, New York, to be at Ithaca College beginning in 2008. We have a Park Center for Independent Media that focuses on the good news. And the good news is that in the failures of mainstream journalism, independent media have grown. One of the biggest failures in modern journalism history was how the front page of the New York Times, the editorial pages of the Washington Post, all the TV networks got the Iraq invasion story wrong. Mm-hmm. They believed all these thinly, easily debunked myths about Saddam Hussein having massive weapons of mass destruction.
Oh,
he had none.
And it just felt like they were lying to some of us who are constantly reading.
Right. You're reading and if you were on the Internet at the time, you knew it wasn't true. If you had access to independent media in 2002 and 2003, you knew it wasn't true.
Exactly.
You knew there was no connection between Al-Qaeda and Iraq, Al-Qaeda who had done the deed on 9/11. You knew that the war, the U.S. invading a Shiite country, that it was not going to be over in weeks or months, and that they'd be waving American flags. But this is what the mainstream media sold us day after day after day. In their failure, independent blogs just sprouted up. The Daily Coast is a more political than journalistic blog. It just boomed.
Yeah.
Later, Glenn Greenwald taking on civil liberties in the Bush administration starts in 2005. Within a couple years, he's a constitutional lawyer. He wasn't even a journalist. He becomes one of the most important journalists in our country within a couple years.
Mm-hmm.
So Democracy Now! Was booming. Mother Jones was booming. The independent media, by just asking the right skeptical questions of the Bush administration back in 2002 and 2003, were able to see through it. Mm-hmm. Then you move forward a few years to 2007-08, where the mainstream media misses the Wall Street meltdown. And while independent journalist Bob Scheer, we're getting it right, and we're warning about it. So in the failures of the mainstream media, And thanks to this thing called the internet, independent media have utterly boomed in the last few years.
But are they able to break through the din of the average reader
and make
any changes?
I think ultimately they've had big impact, bigger than people know. The Attorney General under Bush was forced to resign, Alberto Gonzalez, after a blog that had basically three reporters. Talking Points memo did a series of stories day after day after day that Gonzalez had been involved in the firing of federal prosecutors for political reasons across the country. Federal prosecutors are supposed to be above politics. In the 2008 election, a four-minute viral video done by a nonprofit group called Brave New Films, Brave New Foundation, called McCain's Mansions.
Yeah, that was Glenn Greenwald.
No, it's Robert Greenwald.
Robert Greenwald, the filmmaker.
Four-minute video. It led to a mainstream reporter from Politico going up to McCain. It was huge on the internet. How many homes do you and your wife own? And McCain says, well, we have condos. My staff get back to you on that.
He did not know that.
And it became one of the biggest turning points in the 08 election, and that was an independent outlet that forced a story into the mainstream. Jump to the 2012 presidential election. It was a nonprofit news outlet named Mother Jones that gets his hand through a lot of digging on a video where the Republican presidential candidate, Romney, basically dismisses 47% of the country, says they'll never vote for me, they're dependent on government and believe that they are victims, unquote.
That was a turning point. And
yes.
Mother Jones is the one that broke that, right?
Right, so that's David why I
Corn.
Say that
yeah.
when you really look, while they don't have the tens of millions of viewers and readers every day, they have several million. It's now, for the first time in history, independent media can reach several million people every day.
And it's growing.
It is growing. But it was not the case in the height of the new left in the late 60s, early 70s, when I was working for alternative weeklies. Never close to being able to reach millions of people every day.
Yeah, but that is what gives me hope, too, because I've been so frustrated by the lack of accountability. I mean, honest to God.
Independent media are going to have to fill that bill, and it's hard, because we're going to lose even the internet. And this is the main thing I'd like to warn your listeners. The internet has been such a boon to independent media and journalism.
And freedom of the press in many ways.
Freedom of the press, diversity of views, investigative reporting. And there are now four corporations that bring the internet to, 90% of the country. Those corporations are Comcast, Verizon,
Time Warner,
and AT&T. And those companies are busily lobbying to end net neutrality. Net neutrality is the policy that has caused the internet to be this free and open. It means that the internet provider who gives you your service cannot discriminate and push into a slow lane, a hard to access lane, websites that they don't like, or websites that criticize them, or websites that don't pay them, or websites that they don't own. Well, Verizon is and the others are busily lobbying. We had a candidate named Barack Obama in 2008 who said, I take a back seat to no one when it comes to protecting net neutrality. But then he appointed an FCC chief who's been giving away the store, a crony of his,
Every president seems to do that. They always appoint FCC heads.
They knuckle under to the big money. And the big money, it comes from these telecommunications and media corporations. That's the problem. So there is a group called Free Press, a media reform group that's fighting to preserve the internet as we know it. And they can be found at freepress.net. And people who want to save the internet and save independent journalism, that's the key struggle right now in the area of media policy.
Yeah, we need to get people organizing and advocating. Tell us a little bit more about the Park Center for Independent Media.
Yeah, the Park Center for Independent Media was set up largely by an endowment from the Park Foundation, which is based in Ithaca, New York. And we get journalists and journalism students to be thinking about careers in independent media. The bad news, I tell young journalism students, is that the big media corporations aren't doing much hiring lately. But the good news is the big media corporations aren't doing much hiring lately. In other words, people are having to work for smaller, independent, nonprofit, community radio. They have to start their own outlets. So we set up a center to focus on those outlets. I bring in speakers to speak. We've had Amy Goodman come and speak to the college a couple times.
Give out the great Izzy Award.
Yeah, we give out an award for outstanding achievement in independent media named after after IF Izzy Stone. We call that the Izzy Award. So we've had Mother Jones come and speak. We had Bob Scheer, Jeremy Scahill, who wrote the book Blackwater and the book Dirty Wars. We've had Naomi Klein. We had Arianna Huffington come to campus when the Huffington Post was independent. Now it's merged
it
with
has.
AOL.
I was so shocked by that.
Quite what it used to be, but still I'm glad it exists, and I sometimes blog. So we just try to get students to focus on that there are different career options now, as long as we preserve the Internet.
That's right. Now, what does it say about our democracy when Jon Stewart and Stephen Colbert are probably the best journalists in the country, honestly?
Well, I don't know what we would do without those two.
Me neither.
And not just those two, but the dozens of writers who write for them and are really moral voices in this country are their writers. Especially, I mean, Colbert is unbelievably caring about immigrants, about exploited labor. I mean, there's no one, you know, in the old days, you'd have journalists of every different type, and some of them would be Colbert types. They really care about the most exploited
and
people.
And they really were conservatives.
Right. But I mean, there were all types.
Yeah.
But now, the only voice, the moral voice, I think, is Stephen Colbert and the writers of The Daily Show and Colbert. They criticize the media every day. Yesterday, I saw Jon Stewart, night before we taped this, Jon Stewart was going on about some of the idiocy being said about Obamacare, but he pointed out before he went into the idiocy that, you know, how moderate Obamacare is, and what we really needed was single-payer Medicare for all.
That's right.
So you'll never hear a journalist. I mean, I used to say that before I got kicked off of mainstream TV. Mm-hmm. Phil Donahue used to say we need Medicare for all, like every advanced industrial country. To this day, on mainstream media, those voices are shut off because mainstream media gives you a narrow spectrum, sort of from center to far right. It's a spectrum that we call GE to GM. It's like from General Electric to General Motors. You get like a corporate spectrum of views, not a full spectrum of views in mainstream media. You're right, these two comedy hosts are the ones who fill in that gap and give voices and give a different critique, which is not, I'm somewhere between the Democrats and the Republicans. But on Colbert and Stewart, they point out, you know, both parties are a little corrupt, and both parties are dominated by corporations. You just don't get that from mainstream media elites.
Jeff, we're almost out of time. Do you have any parting words that you want to say to my listeners?
My parting word is that you have to support independent media. If you like any of the things that we said today about preserving journalism and preserving democracy, you have to support independent media, which means if you listen to community radio, you have to donate to community radio. If you read Mother Jones or you know the group I started, fair.org, a lot of people are on that website, you have to donate to keep those websites going. So if you believe in democracy and journalism, you have to make some donations to these nonprofit outlets to keep them afloat. And thankfully, people are doing that, but more people have to do it.
Yeah, and do you have any contact information that you can...
A good website for FAIR, the media criticism group, is fair.org. My website of the Park Center for Independent Media is very easy. It's ithaca.edu/indy, I-N-D-Y. We're it, ithaca.edu/indy. And those are, I think, the places to go.
That's great. Well, Jeff Cohen, thank you so much for joining us. This has been very enlightening. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Again, I've been talking to Jeff Cohen. He is the founding director of the Park Center for Independent Media and an associate professor of journalism at Ithaca College. Thank you.
Thanks.
Our audio producer is Nate Richardson at Rep Studio in Ithaca, New York. Our theme music was composed by Diego Vega. And we are a sponsored project of the New York Foundation for the Arts. Tax-deductible donations are welcome at artspire.org. That's artspire.org. And visit us online at outofboundsradioshow.com. I'm Tish Perlman. We'll be back next week.